This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book, and it is usually glorious. For those of you who don't know, we just went through some kind of a mini hurricane, tropical storm. It was quite a mess yesterday. It was, and it was so bad that as I was on my way to the studio and expecting that my guest would be Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, and we were going to talk about intellectual property rights and some very interesting stories about how people have protected their rights and have won. But unfortunately, he got a call from the marina where he keeps his boat, and they needed him to get down there. So it looks like there was some damage, and all across our area here, from Clearwater down to Tierra Verde, the storm was very, very bad, and a lot of people had problems, including me, because yesterday was my goddaughter's wedding. It was a beach wedding. Okay, well, normally when you plan a beach wedding here in Florida, it works out pretty well. You get a nice time on the beach. And everything was set up, 50 chairs and it was really done beautifully. Unfortunately, it kept raining. We moved it up to 11, then we moved it back to 1 o'clock. And fortunately for just a few minutes, I think it was like 10 minutes, we had an opening. And so we're all rushing down to the beach and wiping off the chairs and sitting down. And then she comes out and she looks so beautiful. I got tears in my eyes as I watched her coming down the beach in her wedding dress. And the rain was just holding off there just long enough so she could walk down to the beach. Walk down the aisle, and there she was, and she was so beautiful. It was amazing sight. And for a little while, there was that, well, we can't call it sunshine, but there was this hint of the sun. And so I got beautiful, beautiful photo of her standing there with her handsome husband, Christopher, and her theme, it was the sort of Beauty and the Beast, although he's not a beast, he's absolutely gorgeous. But those were her colors and her music also, and it was a beautiful, beautiful ceremony, and the rain held off long enough for her to read her vows and for Christopher to read his, and it was so beautiful, and then the rain started coming. Just raindrops, raindrops falling on your head. And I knew that she would take it in good spirit, and she did. She smiled big as always, which is what I love about her, because the first time I saw her, the reason I noticed her was because of her big smile. And she's always got this wonderful, glorious smile that radiates, radiates across the room. Because the first time I saw her in this enormous room, the library downtown in St. Petersburg, and I was giving my very first speech, and she was like one of the last people to enter, and everybody else was already sitting there, all sort of towards the front of the auditorium, and I was ready to give my speech, although I wasn't really ready because I was scared to death. I had never given a speech. It was one thing, I'd been doing the radio program for a while, and it's one thing to talk behind the microphone, and that was nerve-wracking enough when I first started. And the only person watching me was Big Ed in the control room, and he's so sweet. He's like a big teddy bear, so I wasn't too scared. Well, I was scared once in a while because I think he was scared that I would like faint or something. But we managed to get through that. But then when I got to the library to make my speech, I was really scared. I didn't know what I was going to say, I knew that you were supposed to write the speech out in advance, but I actually hadn't. I hadn't gotten very far. And so all I did, and this is so silly when I look back on it, I schlepped like a dozen books of the authors I had spoken to in the few months that I had been doing the program. And they were heavy. And it never occurred to me then, gee, all I had to do was take the covers off and carry the covers. No, I carried the books. So I was like, I was exhausted even. But there's only one book that just, I grabbed that book and I held it in front of me and I just held on like for dear life. And it was Douglas Brunt's book, Ghosts of Manhattan. And he was the first guy I interviewed. I had a few ladies in for like three or four weeks when I started the program. Then he was the first guy. And it's funny how it was different. It's a different dynamics when I'm talking to a guy. there is that intimidation, like, oh, well, he'll say, oh, well, she doesn't know what she's doing. But it turned out to be really one of my favorite interviews ever. He was absolutely delightful. I loved his book, Ghosts of Manhattan. And at that time, I did not have any connections to the publishing industry. I was just getting authors, mostly because they were on my bookshelf. And Douglas Brunt's book had not been a new release when I talked to him. It had been out already a year. I had read it. I had liked it. And I contacted him, and not really knowing if he would, contact me back. But it was so funny. I sent him an email, and within 30 minutes, he responded and said, sure, I'd love to be on your program. Well, he knew nothing about Joy on Paper. I'm sure nothing, actually, because there was nothing to know. But he came on the program, and he was so sweet and so kind. And we just talked about his book, which even today, I will recommend it to you. It's called Ghosts of Manhattan. I think it is the best book written about that whole financial crisis in 2008. It is about stockbrokers, and it is so, he's done it so well that you really feel like you're there following along with these people, getting angry as the protagonist of the book does, but just read about all of the things that were going on. And Doug did it so beautifully. And after that, of course, we became friends and we emailed back and forth. So it's just one of those miracles. But I was holding this book, and then at the last minute, as I was supposed to start speaking, Kenesha opened the door and she walked in. Now, she was all the way at the back of the door, room. But she was she just smiled at me, and it was just such a bright and cheerful smile that I just started the speech. And then I discovered that actually I was very funny when I was speaking, because I didn't know what I was saying half the time. But Kenesha laughed at everything, so I think she led the audience, so that they were all on my side by after 10 minutes. And so it was just wonderful, and I owe her a lot, because she gave me courage that day. And that's when I adopted her and made her my goddaughter, because she has been an important part of my life here ever since that day, and all throughout doing Joy on Paper. I know she listens, and I don't know if she's listening today. She should be on her honeymoon. Although, is anybody on a honeymoon? I mean, nobody can travel. I actually don't know what she's doing. I'm sure nobody's traveling. Nobody's doing anything, particularly in this horrible weather, which is still pretty bad here. So even if it's not a glorious day in Florida, it's always a perfect day to sort of hunker down, and you can read and you can write and you can dream about all the characters that you want to create. And I was so happy the other day I had Ken Pelham. Ken was on the program, and I had been trying to get him for quite a while, because he wrote a book called Great Danger. It's a little book, and it is a wonderful book for any of you writing suspense, thrillers, mysteries. This is a book for you, and it's there's more information in this little book than is, you know, you can find in books that are like 350 pages. It's a wonderful book, and it's by Ken Pelham, and he's the award-winning author of Brigand's Key, so you might want to check that out. In a little while, I am going to be talking to somebody. You know, I can hold up Ken's book. We have on YouTube, so I'm on YouTube, and I can hold up Ken's book. And now I'm going to hold up the book I'm going to be talking to someone about. But I have to be like a weightlifter because this book is gigantic. It is enormous. It weighs a ton. I needed to use a cart to bring it in because it is so big and it is so wonderful. And it is called The New Sotheby's Wine Encyclopedia. And I am going to be talking to, my goodness, it's unbelievable. Somebody who knows the wine. He is the head of Sotheby's Wine Division. And it's just too exciting, really. Jamie Ritchie is an expert. And so I will have him on. He's going to be calling in a little while. And he's in New York City. My goodness, I wouldn't want to be in New York City at this time with all this pandemic-y stuff. By the way, I have coined that word, pandemic-y, and I have written to the Oxford English Dictionary people, and I said, look, I made this word. I combined pandemic and icky, and I think pandemic-y is a perfect description for the year 2020. And so if you go on Twitter, if you're one of these people who go on Twitter or Facebook, send them a message saying, Patsy with a Z created a word, and she would love, there's nothing more an author would love to do than create a word that goes down in history. And I think the year 2020 is going to go down in history for many reasons. And certainly it is a icky, 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 icky pandemic-y year. So you might think about that. Then, as I said, in a little while, I'm going to be talking to Jamie. His name is Ritchie. His last name is Ritchie. Isn't that a wonderful name for somebody who works for Sotheby's? Ritchie. I don't know. I have to ask him about that. You know, Big Ed, let's play one of the book buzzes. Are you there? Let's play just to catch up because, unfortunately, Rita is not coming in right now to do them, but we have... Let's do number whatever you want. 33? Go for it.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz, The Splendor Before the Dark, a novel of the Emperor Nero by author Margaret George. Need I say more? Here's the buzz. With the beautiful and cunning Poppaea at his side, Nero Augustus commands the Roman Empire, ushering in an unprecedented era of artistic and cultural splendor. Although he has yet to produce an heir, his power is unquestioned. But in the 10th year of his reign, a terrifying prophecy comes to pass, and a fire engulfs Rome, reducing entire swaths of the city to rubble. Rumors of Nero's complicity in the blaze start to sow unrest among the populace and the politicians. Nero will either survive and be the first in his family to escape the web of betrayals, that is, the Roman court, or be ensnared and remembered as the last radiance of the greatest dynasty the world had ever known. Margaret George weaves a web of politics and passion as ancient Rome's most infamous emperor cements his place in history in The Splendor Before the Dark. Margaret George specializes in epic fictional biographies of historical figures, takes pains to make them as factually accurate as possible without compromising the drama. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more on my suggestions you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com. And click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joy on paper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Okay, well, that was Rita, and I want to thank her for that. And we have a bunch of her book buzzes that we play all the time, and I'm hoping that we can get her in the studio soon so that she can do some more, because we have so many authors whose books that I have just reviewed, or, you know, they've been on the program recently, and they're also good, and I want to do more book buzzes for them. So in a little while, we're going to talk to Jamie, Richie about this book, and but I thought maybe what we'll do is, because I'm not sure exactly what time he's going to call, why don't we do a commercial? Let's do the commercials, then we'll come back, and then I'll talk some more until he gets on the phone.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I am just waiting for a call from... Oh, my goodness, my mind has went...
Jamie, this is Richie. I know it.
Because I've been thinking about Richie. My goodness. He's going to be on in a little while, and we're going to talk about this magnificent book. It is so beautiful. I'm telling all of you, if you're an author, if you're a writer of any kind, you want to have this book next to you. And if you're going to be giving a gift this year for Thanksgiving or for Christmas... this is the perfect book. It is. It's only $75. I mean, I cannot believe it. It feels like it weighs 75 pounds. It is so magnificent. And this is what National Geographic does. They make these wonderful books that are done with the highest standards, the best paper, the best binding. These are books that really do last a lifetime. If you buy this book for somebody, they are going to pass it down in their family. It is going to be in the same condition 100 years from now. It is because of the quality of their work. National Geographic just knows how to do picture books, particularly, because when they do something like this, here we have maps, we have photos, we have, you know, they must have a zillion photos nowadays, and they can select the very best, and then they can draw on the greatest writers. And so the writers, combined with the photographers, come out with a product that is so good. And for $75, if you want to give a gift that really will last a lifetime, this is it. Instead of everybody sends flowers or a bottle of wine. I mean, this is you know, a good bottle of wine costs $75, but this book will really last forever and hours and hours. I mean, you can spend, I've had this book now and I've had it for about a month, and it's really difficult for me because I keep wanting, it's on my coffee table, it's, as I said, it's very heavy, and I keep stopping and just, I go through it and I look at another picture, I read more details. And for you authors out there, it is an ideal book, because if you want to get your wines, you know, when you're having a, whether it's a mystery or you have a James Bond kind of character who's drinking something fancy, you know, you want the right wine. Well, you can find it in this book. So if you have an author in your life, this is also a great gift to give to them. People often say, well, you know, what can I give a writer? You don't know what books they've read. So you're always like, what should I give? Well, this is the book. This is a reference book. This is the Bible of wine, and nothing can be better than Sotheby's. So I highly recommended it. But meanwhile, I'm waiting for him to call in, and I know he's been going through this pandemic in New York City, which hasn't been very pleasant. I want to mention, people ask me, are there still book deals going on? And I can tell you there are some big, big book deals going on. And so if you are interested in what's happening, if you are looking for an agent who is actually getting deals, this is the kind of agent you want. You want an agent who is active, who is getting deals. Check out Publishers Weekly. They have a section in there. It's under the news section, and it's called Book Deals of the Week. And so every week they list the big deals that have been made, and there have been some big deals. There is I love when they say a significant six-figure sum. Now, they had an auction, a five-house auction. So that means that was really, really exciting when they have an auction. And the winner of that auction, it is a book called by Sierra Rogers called The Outsider Advantage. And it is someone's really happy right now. It's a YA fantasy. So you think to yourself, would somebody pay that kind of money for a YA fantasy? Yes. And they can make big, big bucks. So this is an example today of a deal that was made. And here's the pitch. I'll tell you what the publisher's pitch was. And this got a five auction deal. Five-house auction. It's hashtag girl boss meets the power of broke. Hashtag. I mean, hashtag girl meets the power of broke. That's the elevator pitch. That was what was pitched to the publishers. And five publishing houses jumped on it and said, we want that book. And they started fighting, and they started going back and forth, raising the price every time until significant six-figure means it's around over $700,000. If it says mid six figures, you have $500,000. So this person is nearing $1 million for a YA fiction. I'm telling you, people, you don't know what can happen. You have to start writing. You never know. This book is a... I don't know what it's going to be. I'm looking forward to reading it in about 2 years. That's about the time it takes to get a book published, done, finished, and in the hands of people. So it's really exciting, this whole book publishing world. And that's something that can happen to you, and it could happen to you if you are the kind who loves to read, and I love to read, and so I really love to read, and I love wine, and so I have the perfect book for everybody today, and it is called The New Sotheby's Wine Encyclopedia, and I have, the expert in all of the wine world, as somebody everybody wants to talk to, Jamie Ritchie. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, wow. I can't believe it. It's just so wonderful to talk to you. Well, it's so wonderful to get this book. It is amazing. It is so amazing. And I've been telling my readers for a long time that Thanksgiving to me is the time to give books. You know, people give flowers, people give wine, bottles of wine. But if anybody wants to give a great book, a great gift for Thanksgiving, I suppose nobody's visiting anybody for Thanksgiving, but send them the book, The New Sotheby's Wine Encyclopedia. It is beautiful.
It's a wonderful book because it's 800 pages packed full of information. And it takes a complex subject like wine, which is covers everything from from how grapes are grown to how wine is made to the different regions and the different grape varieties. And it explains all these different elements in very simple language that's easy to comprehend. And you can either dive into different areas, like different regions or different grape varieties, or look at how it's made. And it really is a very, very useful book. It covers storage. It covers different accessories. So it is a true encyclopedia.
It is beautiful. Now, what were the odds that somebody with the name Richie would work for Sotheby's? I mean, isn't that just perfect?
Hopefully. I've been here for around 30 years now.
Yeah,
I in London.
I think it's worked out pretty well. But I think it's so nice, Sotheby's, and then your name is Richie. When you were a little kid, did you ever imagine that you would be the wine expert at Sotheby's?
I didn't, but I did. At age 14 or 15, I started noticing the wines my parents were serving and getting interested in wine. So I didn't realize that. And I also wanted to be an actor when I was younger. So being an auctioneer is a different form of performance, but there's still some acting element to do with it.
Oh, yes. You guys are really great. I've only been to one wine auction. It was a Harrods wine auction. And it was so much fun. And now my husband, I'm not going to say that my husband was cheap. Let's just put it, my husband didn't like to spend money so easily. But he got so caught up in that wine auction. That guy was so good. I mean, he's bidding. And I'm like, after a while, I have to hold his arm down so he doesn't, we weren't rich at the time. We were newlyweds. I said, what are you doing?
It's a fun world, the world of auctions and wine auctions. Yeah, we do about $120 million a year in auctions from New York to London to Hong Kong. So it's a fun world and gives people a lot of pleasure and enjoyment.
Oh, and well, for you, of course, people always wonder, do you get to taste everything? But a lot of these bottles aren't opened when you're, auctioning.
We don't get to taste everything, but we do sample different cellars to make sure the wines are in good condition and that we want to sell them. So we do a lot of tastings, and that's one of the interesting things about our world. And you learn about wine through tasting it and experiencing and understanding what you like and why you like it, and more importantly, what you don't like and why you don't like it.
Well, as you said, this book has everything in it that you could want. And, many of my listeners, of course, are writers. And this is the Bible that they should have next to them when they're writing, because so often people don't have the wines, in their stories. They just sort of throw in the name of any old wine and they really don't know anything. But if they have this reference book, at least their wines can be accurate.
It really is a great reference book. I started using it in 1988, and I still refer to it today, and it's got all those comprehensive sections, and it truly is something I go back to very, very frequently, and it's well worthwhile.
So you've had some really magnificent auctions lately.
Yes, we've been lucky. We've done a big transition in our business from live auctions to online auctions, and so we've undergone a sort of digital transformation that was planned for like 2 to 3 years, and we did it in 2 to 3 months. And our market has been vibrant. We still have people still want to drink wonderful wines. They need to drink them, and they need to enjoy them. They need to share them, and they need to have good times. And wines are there for sharing and for having great experiences.
Which nationalities drink the most wines? Which country?
So America's just become recently the number one wine consuming nation, followed by I think it's Italy and then France and then Spain. But America's got that mantle for the last couple of years, and we're seeing the per capita consumption increase across the country.
So tell us about some of your auctions lately. You had what was the big one? I forgot the name now.
We did a collection called the Summit Collection in Hong
Kong.
Oh,
yes.
Which was a $14 million auction. So that was just from one collector. The collection actually came from America. And we actually shipped it to Hong Kong, and we sold it in Hong Kong. Our market has evolved a lot. Traditionally, it was a European marketplace, and then Europe and North America. And now we have interest from Latin America, from Asia. And the Asian wine bars are the least price sensitive, so it's a very, very important market for us.
So do you get to travel to all of these locations to see the wines where they are? Well, you know, when you're auctioning off the wines, they don't send them to you. I mean, they are in the places where they've been kept for years sometimes, right?
Well, so we do traditionally move the wines to one of our three locations. So we still have auctions in London, New York, and Hong Kong. And so we do pack up these collections and we do ship them to our locations. So we have them in our warehouses, our temperature-controlled warehouses, before we have the auction. And after the auction, we ship them to the new buyers, or the new buyers come and pick them up. So we are actually physically moving the wines to one of our three locations.
And what is the most expensive bottle of wine you've auctioned off?
So I was, the world record for a bottle of wine is a bottle of Romani Conti 1945, and that was sold from the cellar of Robert Drouin a couple of years ago, and I was the lucky one to be the auctioneer for that, and it sold for $550,000.
Oh, boy. You know, my husband landed up paying, I think, £175. It was a charity auction. Harrods was giving the money away. But we paid £175 for this bottle of wine, which at the time we really shouldn't have done that. But he loved it, and we had it for years and years. And we did actually open it for a special occasion, and it was terrible. But, you know, what the heck? We had so much fun.
So I think the lesson there is if you've got good bottles, don't wait for too long. Enjoy them and make sure you have the opportunity. Wine's there to be consumed and enjoyed.
Yes. Well, you know, we expected that since it was Harrods that it would be last a little while. It didn't, but we had fun. We still have the bottle, so, you know, it's okay. And, yep. When I first moved to Europe, one of the things that we did on our first honeymoon, we went to Brussels, and we went to the Metropole Hotel. And there they have this magnificent lobby, and I ordered Calvados. Now, being an American, I had no idea what Calvados was, but I had read about it in books, and I always wanted to order it. And the waiter asked me, young or old? And luckily, I said young, because I discovered the old was like four times the price.
Exactly. You've got to be careful.
Oh, I was lucky. And my husband, who had no idea, he was, you know, like, when he saw the price, he could not believe it. And I had to act. It was our honeymoon. He had to pay for it. But it was rather shocking. But it's a good lesson. It's a good lesson that you have to know your wines. And with this book, you can. There's so many things, and I wish you, maybe you could come back and really give. As I said, because we have so many writers who listen to this program, they could really look, really enjoy insights into all of this. There's so many things. I just turn the page. I've had the book now for like 3 weeks, and I'm turning the page. I stop. I'm supposed to be cleaning the house or something, and I'll sit down and I'll say, I have to look at another thing. There's everything. Even I found this photograph of a vineyard worker fills cow horns with manure. I mean,
That's the biodynamic treatment that some people are doing in their vineyards to one step beyond organic.
Wow. You know, there's all this information, and I know that you're on one of these tours, and I can't keep you very long. I'm supposed to let you go in a few minutes, but I want really to tell you that I think it's wonderful. By the way, are you related to the rugby star with the same name?
I'm not. He has exactly the same name, Jamie Ritchie, plays for Scotland. But we're no relation.
Well, you know, I lived in England for many years, and so I'm more a soccer, rugby person than an American football. I don't understand American football. So, but when I saw it, I thought, yeah, Jamie Ritchie. Okay, well, you know, I'm supposed to let you go, right? They want you off this line. Jamie Ritchie, I just want to thank you. Are they pushing you to get off to another call?
I think I have another call, yes.
Yeah, so I can't talk to you more. But perhaps I could arrange that you could come back and give me a half an hour, talk about wine.
Sure, I'd be delighted to do that.
And because you're in this pandemic mode, you're probably in your apartment, and you might have some time in between auctions. How about that?
Exactly. I'd be delighted to.
Okay, thank you. And I will highly recommend this to everybody as the perfect gift for Thanksgiving. Instead of going to somebody's house for dinner, send them the book. They'll love it. It'll keep them busy, and they won't be too sad for the entire day. Okay, so...
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Jamie Ritchie, for being on Joy on Paper today. And the book is The New Sotheby's Wine Encyclopedia. It is beautiful. It is the best. And it will last a lifetime, many lifetimes. People will hand this down for generations. Thank you for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, I have to have him back. I really do. This, as I said, every page you just turn this, every page you just say, you want to read it, and the ABC of grape varieties, and pictures about how to make wine, and all the maps. What I love maps. I love any book with maps, but this book particularly, it has all the maps of all the areas where wine, where grapes are grown. And, of course, as I said, because it is a wonderful book by National Geographic, it is just the paper alone. You know, sometimes you can tell a lot, actually, sometimes about how a publisher feels about an author by the paper. I notice these things. And a few years ago, I noticed that a certain author who is very famous, the new books were coming out and the paper wasn't as good. And I noticed it. And so publishers look for every which way to make a profit, and they will cut, let's say, they will use a lesser value paper for books that they think aren't going to make all the money back. So I notice these kind of things. And when I get a book I feel that the paper is great, and I know when paper is great. It's just, I know that the author is somebody that publisher really, really likes. So, lots of things you learn nowadays just from little observations. And that's partly what makes a great writer. And I've been thinking a lot about where things are. This pandemic-y period has been really, really difficult for authors. And there are so many challenges. And as I look at it, I've talked over and over about how an author needs to do this and do that. Like today, we were supposed to have Bill Larson on because I wanted to talk to him about several cases that have come up in regards to intellectual property, where people have either lost because they didn't plan their intellectual property ahead, or they've gained because they have. Now, last week we had Lee Child and his brother. It's so hard for me to call him Andrew Child. His brother is Andrew Grant, Andrew Child, and of course to me he is Drew. But Lee was on, and the first time that he appeared on Joy on Paper, we talked about his books, and then I met him at BoucherCon when he was here at the Vinoy Hotel, and it was really great. I had a wonderful time. And at that time, of course, he had sold the rights to Jack Reacher to Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise really wanted to play Jack Reacher. Now, I'm trying to think, I always, when it first happened, when, having read Lee Child's books right from the very beginning, from The Killing Floor, the very first book, I knew Jack Reacher, the character, very well. And, of course, I knew that Jack Reacher was based on Lee Child, whose real name is Jim Grant. And so Jim is tall, very tall, a big guy. He had 200 pounds. Somebody who doesn't actually like to run. He has blue eyes. And so when Lee Child wrote the book, he based, Jack Reacher on himself. And so you read the books, and if you've been reading the books, you realize that, Jack Reacher's big. He doesn't like to run. He tries not to run. If he has to run, he'll run. But believe me, you don't want to get caught. But there was Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise read the books. Tom Cruise fell in love with the character, and he wanted to play Jack Reacher. We're not going to go into the psychology of that. Exactly what does that mean to Tom Cruise? He did see a great character and a great opportunity. And so, you know, when he first was contacted, Lee Child wasn't enthusiastic about it. I mean, it wasn't his idea. You know, you write a character and you see the character in your head, you live with him. And certainly by then, I think it was up to like 20 books or something like that. So you can imagine that he told, you know, Tom Cruise wants to play lead, you know, your character. And I can see that it was a little bit, you know, strange. And but Lee explained it this way. He had a choice: sell the rights to Tom Cruise or buy a Monet. Tom Cruise in one hand, Monet in the other hand. Well, the Monet won out. So he sold the rights to Jack Reacher to Tom Cruise. Now, this, you know, of course it made him a lot of money. But in those days when that was done, there wasn't streaming video. And streaming video has changed everything. So who had the rights? Did Lee Child have the rights to Jack Reacher? Or did Tom Cruise have the rights in Tom Cruise's companies? And all vice, you know, all sort of mixed up things. Well, luckily, because Lee Child, whose former name is Jim Grant, and he was a producer in England on Granada TV, and so he knew enough, and he knew, certainly, I'm sure he had some good lawyers, because they put in a clause, and I don't know the details, and I've been trying to, I didn't want to ask him on air, but I'm going to find out one day exactly what that clause said, because he was able to get back the rights to Jack Reacher. So now, they are working, and they're already filming the streaming video of Jack Reacher, which is going to be an enormous success, just like Bosch. Now, on streaming video, if any of you have been watching Bosch, I think it's in the third season now. Terrific, terrific. I think it's one of the best streaming video content, you know, that you can find. And I'm sure the new Jack Reacher one will be great, too. But now, Lee Child is the executive director. So the stories can be told the way he wants them told. He has the rights. But if he had not had a great lawyer, and if he had not thought about it, I have a feeling it was his idea. Because I think at some point he probably thought, well, I'll make enough money, and then I can finance a movie. I don't think he thought about streaming video, but he thought about actually one day doing a movie with Jack Reacher the way he saw Jack Reacher in his mind. So I'd love to know that clause, and every lawyer, and probably Bill Larson can find out, every lawyer should know what that clause was. That, because it's very rare that an author in general, because you don't think about it. You don't know what can happen in the future. So you sign over everything to a publisher. Publishers will try to take everything. I mean, that's what they're there for. They want to make profits, and they want to make profits on everything. And nowadays they do. In the past, there were contracts where they didn't have, the publisher didn't have the right to the ancillary products, to the stuffed animals, to costumes, to whatever. In most cases now, publishers are wiser. But obviously some publisher here, wow, something happened so that Lee Child is now going to have a major streaming video. You know, I'm going to play one more book buzz because I want to get caught up. Can we do number 30, I think, right? We have the next one. And that's been... Big Ed's going to find that for me because I'm just waiting for the day that Rita Moreau feels that she can come back in the studio and not breathe Clorox. Okay, here we go.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz, The Captain and the Queen by author Philip Vega. Here's the buzz. This is the story of The Captain and the Queen, a coming-of-age romance set on Long Island. The passions of a daughter of a Greek tycoon and a Hispanic boy from a middle-class family are tested against all odds as they become more than just friends. The question is, how long can it possibly last? This story excels in characterization. It is easy to identify with Callie and her relationship with her wealthy but distant dad. The school life scenes and settings are well written and easily take the reader back to high school again. That's a review from Indie Tale Magazine this December of 2018. So enjoy Philip Vega's heartwarming tale of love in the mid-1980s by reading The Captain and the Queen today. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joy on paper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Okay, well, thanks again to Rita for doing that Book Buzz. And as I said, we have a lot more to come as soon as things clear up a little bit. Right now, I'm sitting here in with this wonderful smell of Clorox number 5, and it's gotten to my throat a little bit, so that's why I wanted to play a Book Buzz so that I could take a drink of water, not a drink of wine, unfortunately. I'm going to send a suggestion to Sotheby's. If they want me to continue to promote this, they should send me one of those bottles of wine. That would be really great. Oh, can you imagine? Boy, oh boy, I love to talk about it. They can send me a bottle every month, and they can, I'll talk about it every month because it's a wonderful book. And they are just such nice people at National Geographic. I want to thank them so much for sending this book and for all of the books that they send me. And I am really serious. This is a time of the year that it's going to be sad for many people because they're not going to have their families at Thanksgiving. So to surprise them with a book like this book, I tell you, if you start reading this on Thanksgiving morning, you're going to still be reading it in the evening, and you're going to have a day a day of fun and joy. So I would really like to recommend that. And I would also like to recommend, and I'm going to read it the next program. Oh, Eileen Spinelli's book called Thankful. I'm going to read that next time. But next week, I have David Baldacci on for the 7th or 8th, 9th. I don't know. He's on all the time because he writes so much. And he's going to be on the program next week. And it is such a thrill to have him back and to talk about his latest book and to talk about all of the good things that he does to help promote reading. Because that is one of the things that he and his wife have done. They have really dedicated themselves to encouraging people to read, and particularly children. And so it's a thrill that he's going to be on. And then what else do I have? Oh, I have so many wonderful people coming up in the next few months, one after another. I've just been getting all these requests, and I want to thank everybody for all of their suggestions. I've also invited some authors that you have suggested, and as they start accepting my invitation to be on Joy on Paper, I will let you know so that you can listen in. And one time when Bill Larson's wife, Mickey Larson, is the one who said that Margaret George was her favorite author. And so I called up Margaret George. I said, well, I have somebody here who's your biggest fan. And so Margaret George came on Joy on Paper. And that was the start of a beautiful friendship. I went up to meet her up in Madison, Wisconsin. And she gave me a tea party. And I got to meet her tortoise that is 38 years old now. So I've had so much fun with doing things like that. So I love your suggestions because I never know. I get a lot of books from publishers, but sometimes it's just knowing what you enjoy. You can go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com, and at the bottom of the front page, there is a little form you fill in, and you tell me the authors that you want me to invite. And I will invite them, and I will tell you, and you might want to join in on the conversation. And that's all you have to do, and go right there and let me know, because one of the things I want to do is to encourage all of you to write, and part of it is encouraging you to read, because you have to read. To be a really great author, you have to be a writer, vice versa. It comes through. If you read well, you will write well. It's just all sort of a discipline of learning how to pay attention to what you're reading. And it's like magic. It really is like magic. And then that's when you find all of this fun that I talk about, and that the authors who have been on my program talk about. That they, although they've going through the pandemic-y time too, just like all of you, they are not quite as desperate or as crazy or as upset or as lonely, because they have the characters in their minds, and these characters are living in their minds and keeping them going. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing that can happen to you. And it might happen that you just start by doing some squiggles on a page, which might lead to a song. And, I know, next week I'm going to also have Haley Woolbridge, who wrote Boxcar. I played that the other day, a couple of times now, and she's going to be joining me after David Baldacci. So that's something to look forward to, because that's a wonderful, wonderful song. I've been listening to Boxcar every day. So it's just so exciting, all the things that can happen when you start writing. You might write a poem, you might write a song, you might write a book, a fiction, or a memoir, or even get really involved in some nonfiction subject and write a serious nonfiction book. You never know, you'll win the Nobel Prize. Anyway, it's just something that you have to start doing, because remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel. You'll never know unless you start writing. So just sit down this weekend and enjoy and see those words just turn into magic, and the characters get into your head and maybe even drive you a little bit crazy. But it's fun. You'll love them. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I'll say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, so much for everything. Everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And Ed saluted me, and I saluted him. Bye-bye, everybody.